Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
Good evening. It's Thursday, October 4th. Gonna do a show for the Patriots tonight. No, let me rephrase that. Gonna do a show for concerned Americans. True Americans. Not you Americans that think that we should be socialist. Go back to your crack pipe and take a couple puffs and be happy with your existence. The adults will make the decisions that need to be made. So what I want to talk about is this. It's been a while. There's been some developments, I know, in the deep state. And I'm not just talking about the Kavanaugh thing. I'm not. You have to understand that this is an ongoing deep state trying to screw Trump, and Trump, of course, will not back down. You know, they call Trump a bully. No, he's a bully that bullies the bully, which is the deep state. I like him. About time we get a president that has a spine and isn't afraid to use it. So, let's get back to what we're talking about here. All right, we got a couple things here. And, of course, Sundance, being what he is, was a very busy person today. Now this, if you're not familiar, James Baker is a lawyer with the Department of Justice. We're not talking about Jim Baker, who was the Secretary of State decades ago. But it's always been rumored that he is one of the people that have rolled over and is now, let's put it this way, spilling the beans about the FBI, DOJ, in their coup attempt. I also think the other person that might have rolled over is Lisa Page. That's my guess. So, let's get started with this. The DOJ, NSD, that's the Department of Justice National Security Division, and the FBI are holding a press conference today at 9:30. Obviously, this was written earlier today. The topic's unknown, but the timing coincides with the document production subpoena from the House Judiciary Committee for McCabe memos, the Woods file supporting the Carter Page FISA application, and the Gain of Eight documents on the Russia investigation. Now, in related news, the former FBI Chief Legal Counsel, James Baker, delivered testimony to the Joint House Committee yesterday in an ongoing investigation of corrupt FISA processes and Spygate. Now, The Hill and Fox News both have reports on it. There has been some speculation James Baker is a willing cooperating witness within this ongoing investigation. Sundance would urge skepticism and caution toward that view. Baker is currently a participating member of Lawfare. He is not likely to testify in opposition to his DOJ and FBI ideological allies, despite their corrupt activity. Remember, if you're on the left, they subscribe to the philosophy by any means necessary. Indeed, Mr. Baker attended the closed-door hearing with lawyers to protect all interests, including James Baker's. One of the more interesting leaks from the testimony is found in a report from John Solomon of The Hill, where he outlines a Jim Baker admission that lawyers from the DNC, that is, the Perkins Coie law firm, met with FBI officials in the run-up to the Carter Page FISA application used against the Trump campaign. Congressional investigators have confirmed that a top FBI official met with Democratic Party lawyers to talk about allegations of Donald Trump-Russia collusion weeks before the 2016 election. And before the Bureau secured a search warrant targeting Trump's campaign. Former FBI General Counsel James Baker met during the 2016 season with at least one attorney from Perkins Coie, the DNC's private law firm. So essentially, the article is affirming a connection validated by James Baker, where the Steele dossier, a product of DNC funding, specifically the Hillary campaign, was deployed with knowledge of origin by the FBI in the FISA application. Now, those of us who have followed this story closely may not see this as much of a big discovery. However, the DNC and Clinton team have adamantly denied their transparent connection. So this could remove their defensive talking point. Well, of course they're going to deny it. What are they going to do? Say, yeah, we tried to cheat, but still, Hillary's a good person. No, she isn't. She's not a good person at all. Never has been, and she never will be. The fact that FBI officials were meeting with a lawyer representing the interest of a presidential candidate to frame the investigative material against the candidate's opposition is a serious issue. Then again, with overwhelming evidence highlighting the plot, by now everyone accepts this corrupt activity took place within the FBI under James Comey to the secret benefit of their Hillary Clinton campaign. Oh, my shocked face. Ooh. Of course, the use of Perkins Coie lawyers as a go-between provides Clinton plausible deniability. Every corrupt behavior in Clinton world is based on plausible deniability and parcel tongue use of obfuscated language. Additionally, Joint Committee Republican Representative Mark Meadows told The Hill's new morning television show Rising, there is evidence the FBI had human sources secretly recording members of the Trump campaign. To quote, there's a strong suggestion that confidential human sources actually tape members of the Trump campaign, end quote, Meadows told The Hill.tv host Crystal Ball and Ned Ryan. If true, and if it can be proved, this puts an even bigger shadow over the insufferably corrupt institutional behavior already identified within the DOJ and FBI under the Obama administration. Now, with about 34 days left before the midterm elections and no visible efforts being made toward willingly providing documents for oversight or having a sense of urgency therein, it still appears the current corruption monitors, leadership within the DOJ and FBI are trying to run out the clock and avoid exposing the institutional corruption that remained visible near the surface. Perhaps, after Judge Kavanaugh has confirmed, the pressure will mount upon the DOJ and FBI, specifically upon Deputy Attorney General Rosensnake and Deputy Director Christopher Wray, to provide the demanded sunlight and declassification of documents. Christopher Wray is weak. He's a terrible leader. Now, Rosensnake is expected to answer questions about his wire comments to Congress on October 11th. And Miss Nellie Orr is scheduled to deliver her Spygate testimony on October 19th. The proverbial clock is ticking. Yes, yes, yes. Now, as a follow-up, we got to get to this. Published later on today, it turns out that DNC lawyer Michael Sussman was providing the FBI information for the Trump investigation and the FISA warrant. And guess who he works for? That's right, Perkins Coie. After initially stating a DNC lawyer was a source of information to the FBI for use in their counterintelligence operation against the Trump campaign, the name of the lawyer from the DNC law firm of Perkins Coie has now been revealed as Michael Sussman. According to Catherine Herridge, testimony from former FBI legal counsel James Baker revealed that Michael Sussman, representing the Clinton team, was feeding information to the FBI for use against the Trump campaign. Now, while this is an explosive confirmation, it is not necessarily surprising. You see, in March and April of 2016, around the same time when NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers was shutting down contractor access to FBI and NSA databases, an effort to stop the frequent FISA 702s, 16 and 17 search abuses that were taking place. By the way, Admiral Mike Rogers is a relatively unknown, unsung hero of this republic. I personally believe it was him and his efforts that really stopped a huge, I don't want to say constitutional crisis, but I can't think of another way to explain it. He stopped the coup. He said no and shut it down. So when you hear the name Admiral Mike Rogers, don't lump him in with all these other clowns. Don't do it. He, I think, single-handedly was the man who saved this republic and stopped this coup. Now, getting back to it, Michael Sussman met with FBI counsel James Baker. And they met at the Global Privacy Summit April 5th, 2016. Now, the researcher TWE put a lot of details of how Sussman lines up within the larger story on the Twitter spread. With his former DOJ national security credentials, Mike Sussman integrated himself with the DNC's cybersecurity team, and following the DNC, you know, hack, also known as the Seth Rich leak, Sussman introduced the DNC to CrowdStrike. The DNC goal was to identify the intrusion and the extent of the compromise. Apparently, during the testimony delivered by James Baker yesterday, Mr. Baker outlined that Perkins Coie, DNC lawyer Michael Sussman, was giving information to the FBI for use in the collaborative investigative efforts against the Trump campaign. These additional source of information to the FBI paints a rather stark picture of what was happening. The Clinton team hired Fusion GPS to dig up dirt on Trump, package it as a dossier, and deliver it to the FBI for exploitation. Now, that little paragraph right there, what we just said, kind of sums up the operational method. This was the main idea. This is how they're going to do it. I'll say it again so we're all on the same page. The Clinton team hired Fusion GPS to dig up dirt on Trump, package it as a dossier, and deliver it to the FBI for exploitation. Fusion GPS is a political research firm and network of political operatives who sell their mercenary services to anyone willing to pay. Fusion has resources inside and outside government and the capability to exploit FBI and NSA databases containing information about U.S. citizens. Fusion then uses a secondary network of media outlets who they pay to write articles shaped for their purpose. Now, Fusion GPS is operated by Glenn Simpson. Now this is me speaking. I'm thinking to myself, if you have a private company that has access to FBI, NSA databases, and the capability to exploit them to whoever wants to pay them, I am all for a black op to go in there and kill them all. I know it sounds kind of silly, but at some point in time, you can't put these people in prison. Some of them will go to prison. Some of them may not ever go to prison. Some should be in prison. But yet, here they are. And they're not even driven by ideology. It's who will pay, who's willing to pay the highest price. And I'm willing to bet, if there's one Fusion GPS out there, I bet you there's dozens more just like them. Now, they call themselves a political research firm. And maybe they are. But this is what happens when you play mercenary and you don't care what it is you're doing as long as the bill gets paid. As far as I'm concerned, they're a willing participant in a coup attempt against the American people and this constitutional republic. And because there are willing participants, let's face it, hey, there are no innocent victims in this mess. There aren't. They need to pay the price. You know, in ancient Rome, if you were involved in a coup against the emperor and you were found out, you were given a choice. Either we'll kill you or you kill yourself. But you aren't going to keep going on. Perhaps it's time for it to happen again. Glenn Simpson needs to go to federal prison because, after all, GPS is operated by him, owned by him, and because it is, he and he alone bears the ultimate responsibility for what happens with his company. Let's get back to it. In April 2016, at the same time NSA Director Mike Rogers was shutting down contractor access to the FBI NSA database, and at the same time, FBI legal counsel is meeting with Perkins Coie lawyer Michael Sussman. Hillary Clinton, through Perkins Coie, the law firm, hired Fusion GPS to target her presidential campaign opponent, Donald Trump. Now, Fusion GPS founder Glenn Simpson then assigned Russian expert and CIA research analyst Nellie Orr to the Trump project. At the time, Nellie Orr's husband, Bruce Orr, was a number 4 ranking official inside the DOJ National Security Division. Simultaneous to Nellie Orr's assignment, Fusion GPS also subcontracted with Christopher Steele for additional material and internal collaboration with Mrs. Orr. All right, see the links now? Glenn Simpson, Nellie, and Bruce Orr then worked with Christopher Steele on the Steele dossier and the promotion of the content therein to media and FBI allies. We now know that in addition to Fusion GPS, Chris Steele, Nellie Orr, via her husband Bruce Orr, the number 4 intelligence guy there, and then in the National Security Division of DOJ, providing information to the FBI, there was Michael Sussman, representing the DNC, also providing information to the FBI for the same purposes. The FBI, through Peter Stroke et al., then closed the loop by exploiting the information within the dossier to gain a Title I FISA surveillance warrant on the Trump campaign. Now, in October of 2016, with the FISA Title I surveillance warrant in hand, the prior unauthorized exploitation of the FISA database was made legal. FISA warrants also apply retroactively, and the FBI could now conduct open surveillance on the Trump campaign and full post-election surveillance on the pending Trump administration. This was the insurance policy. All of this activity is now a matter of public record. None of it is disputed. This network of activity has gained a great deal of sunlight over the past 9 months as witnesses have given testimony to Congress and documents have been released showing how it all came together. With around 34 days left before the midterm elections and no visible efforts being made toward willingly providing documents for oversight or having a sense of urgency, it appears the current corruption monitors. Leadership within the DOJ and FBI are trying to run out the clock and avoid exposing the institutional corruption that remains visible near the surface. The proverbial clock is ticking. Oh, my, oh, my. What a tangled web we weave when we practice to deceive. Well, it's true. That's true. Now, all right, we've got more. Now, for those of you who have not heard, there is a Democratic staffer who worked for Sheila Jackson Lee. She, I believe her district's in Houston, the liberal conclave in Houston. And it's a crappy district. She's done nothing for those poor people. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse every time she's done there. And if you actually listen to Representative Lee on the floor, and I'm not trying to be funny here, but you will hear and listen for your, with your own ears just how ignorant, and by ignorant I mean by the true sense of the word, a truly uneducated person speaking. And it's kind of sad, actually, that she doesn't know what it is that's going on. But anyways, after the Kavanaugh hearings, one of her quote-unquote interns released the personal addresses and phone numbers of three Republican senators, Mike Lee, Orrin Hatch, and Lindsey Graham. Well, he's been arrested. Yay. And according to his social media profile, he's a Democratic political professional student. What does that tell you? But according to Sundance on October 3rd, according to U.S. Capitol Police announcement, they arrested a man named Jackson A. Cosco, COSKO, 27, for publishing the private information of at least one senator online. Jackson A. Cosco, age 27, of Washington, D.C., has initially been charged with 18 U.S. Code, subsection 119, making public restricted personal information, 18 U.S. Code, subsection 1512b3, witness tampering, 18 U.S. Code, subsection 875d, threats and interstate communications, Title 18 U.S. Code, subsection 1030a3, unauthorized access of a government computer, Title 18 United States Code, subsection 1028a7, identity theft, the D.C. Code, and 22801b, second degree burglary, and DC code subsection 22-3302b, unlawful entry. Let's hold it here. Let's take a look at these things. All right. The ones that have really got me really interested now, because this is the first time I've seen the actual charges. Let's talk about them. There we go. 18 subsection, Title 18 U.S. Code, subsection 1030A3, unauthorized access of a government computer, which tells me he was using a computer that he was not supposed to be using, and 18 U.S.C. subsection 1028A7, identity theft, which would seem to me to mean he used someone else's codes to access that particular government computer. And then he's getting hit with two local charges, looks like both at least one felony and one misdemeanor. The DC code, section 22801B, second degree burglary. So it seems, I would guess, mind you, this is the way I see it, and I'm right off the cuff here, people. But just look at those three, it would seem to me he broke into an office that was not supposed to have access to. He uses someone else's login information, identity theft, on a computer to frame someone else because he used their access on a government computer he was not supposed to have access to. Which just begs the question. Do you really think this clown, this professional student, didn't have the go-ahead to do it, and that he did it on his own? Do you really think so? I don't. Because people like him are, well, they're weasels. And weasels don't do anything unless they have cover. And my guess is somebody high up knew what he was doing, approved it, and gave him the go-ahead to do it. And the fact that he's got secondary burglary, that means he had to have unlawful entry. So either he picked the lock, or he had a key, and if he had a key to an office he was supposed to be in, how did he get that key? Now the investigator, I'm just putting it out there. You tell me what you think. Now the investigation will continue, and additional charges may be forthcoming. I'd like to see additional arrests. Because I don't think this clown has the wherewithal, the guts to do it. Plus, if you look at his picture, you see exactly what kind of a weasel he actually looks like a weasel. He probably is. So, Jackson Costco is a staff member for Democratic Representative Sheila Jackson Lee. If you remember, Sheila Jackson if you're watching the Kavanaugh hearings with Dr. Ford lying her way on the during the questioning, she was the female representative handing an envelope of what was in the envelope, contents are unknown, to a lawyer. That's her. And a former staff member for Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan and Barbara Boxer. Perhaps Mr. Costco was also the staffer tasked with filling the envelopes Representative Sheila Jackson Lee was spotted passing out at the Kavanaugh hearing. So let's take a look at the weasel's resume here. It looks like he's been a staffer at the Senate for 2 years, 5 months. Legislative correspondent, systems administrator. Has an assistant senior staff with issues before the Commerce Committee, including technology, telecommunications, transportation, as well as cybersecurity matters before the Homeland Security Committee. If he's on the Homeland Security Committee, that means he has a security clearance. Need to revoke that immediately. He was a press assistant, systems administrator in the Washington, D.C. metro area. Also served as legislative research assistant covering technology, cybersecurity, space, science, and telecommunications. He was a staff assistant, and he was a press intern when he first started out. Now, he was only a press intern from January 2016 to March 2016. And then 3 months later, he's a staff assistant. From April 2016 to July 2016. That's only 4 months. After that, he becomes a press assistant systems administrator. So inside the space of roughly 7 months, he goes from a press intern to a press assistant systems administrator. Oh, this guy's a little weasel from the word go. You can just see it right there. My, oh my. Again. What a tangled web we weave when we practice to deceive. Yes? Interesting stuff. And I don't believe for a minute he did it on his own. He's too much of a weasel. Just look at his, like I said, look at his resume and you'll see it. It's like, huh? Really? Okay. In the meantime, here's something interesting that just popped up on the Hill yesterday.
A Russian deputy attorney general who is thought to have directed attorney...
Oh, yeah. Well, Should I play that for you? I think I will. This is from The Hill. And what it is, the Russian official with ties to a lawyer in the Trump Tower meeting has died in a helicopter crash. Something to think about here, huh? Would you like to hear it? Of course you do. This is from thehill.com.
A Russian deputy attorney general who is thought to have directed attorney Natalia Veselnitskaya in her efforts abroad on behalf of Russia's government died Wednesday night in a helicopter crash. The Daily Beast reported that the deputy attorney general died Wednesday night in an unauthorized helicopter flight that ended in a crash near a village northeast of Moscow. The deputy attorney general was reportedly behind Veselnitskaya's global efforts to lobby lawmakers to overturn anti-corruption acts such as the U.S. Magnitsky Act.
Okay. So Carpentin was reportedly behind Veselnitskaya's global efforts to lobby lawmakers to overturn the anti-corruption act such as the U.S. Magnitsky Act, which passed in 2012, which says... It's U.S. legislation is similar to others around the world, which commemorates Sergei Magnitsky, a lawyer who died trying to expose a $230 million fraud scheme in Russia. The acts have reportedly incensed, who? Russian President Putin. Now, the Daily Beast reported that Karapetyan signed a letter on behalf of Russia's government to a U.S. court in 2014, refusing assistance into an investigation concerning Magnitsky's death. The letter was drafted reportedly with aid from Veselnitskaya. Now, Veselnitskaya. 2 years later, Veselnitskaya was involved in a meeting with Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr., and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and former campaign Trump chairman, Paul Manafort, at Trump Tower. The meeting... Let's get out of there. I hate the pops-ups. The meeting, which occurred during the 2016 presidential election, was reportedly set up under the presumption that Veselnitskaya would present damaging information on Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton to the Trump campaign. Trump Jr. has maintained publicly that the meeting was a waste of time, stating that the meeting was focused on Russian adoption policy. Veselnitskaya, however, has said publicly that the two discussed the Magnitsky Act during the meeting, alleging that Trump Jr. pledged to look into the issue after his father assumed office. If we come to power, we can return to this issue and think what to do about it. I understand our side may have messed up, but it'll take a long time to get to the bottom of it, she recalled Trump Jr. saying, speaking in an interview with Bloomberg News. The meeting has come under intense scrutiny of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's ongoing investigation, which is seeking to determine if members of then-candidate Trump's campaign knowingly colluded with Russia to interfere in the 2016 election. What they're not telling you is that collusion is not a crime. Trump Jr. and other members of his father's campaign and administration have repeatedly denied having any ties to Russia during the election. The only time collusion is a crime is when you're dealing with antitrust acts. That's when collusion's illegal. And not that it happened, but if it did, so what? It's not against the law. As a matter of fact, if you want to talk about collusion, you need to look no further than the Steele dossier. And they were colluding with a former MI6 agent to create the Steele dossier. Yes, it's true. All right. Now, where am I? Okay. Let's get on to this one. Now, this is going to be interesting. And I try not to get... I don't want to do this, but I think it's necessary to be said. Because I love watching the Democrats go bonkers. I do. They are losing their minds, and the more they keep up with this nonsense with Kavanaugh, it keeps, you know, people are seeing for what it is, and the American people don't like it. The ones who like it are the true leftists who believe in any means necessary true or not true, that, you know, Trump must be stopped, must be stopped, must be stopped, no matter what. It doesn't matter. However, most Americans don't like what they're seeing. And I think come next month in the midterm election, I think it's going to turn on and bite the Democrats right on the backside. And I hope they, I hope it bites them and never lets up. So what we're talking about now is something I thought I wasn't going to, but we need to do this. You need to hear this, all right? We're talking about a retired FBI agent and DOJ lawyer, Miss Monica McLean, attended the Kavanaugh hearing with Blasey Ford. If you have not, and if you've not heard the name Monica McLean, we're going to get it out in the open right here, right now. So, according to Sundance, earlier today, we did a deep dive in the background of Miss Christine Blasey Ford's lifelong friend, Monica Lee McLean. We outlined how Miss Ford and Miss McLean grew up together. They went to high school together, moved to California together, went to college together, were roommates together in California. And after college, Miss McLean then took the bar exam in California and joined the DOJ as a lawyer for the FBI. Throughout their lives, Miss Ford and Miss McLean remained close friends and vacationed together, etc. Miss McLean worked with the FBI for 24 years, retiring in 2016. Miss Ford and Miss McLean were together at the Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, when Miss Ford wrote the accusatory letter toward Brett Kavanaugh, which was sent to Senator Dianne Feinstein. So Miss Blasey Ford and Miss McLean, being together for the writing of the letter on July 30th and for the testimony that was an outcome of that letter on September 27th, presents an interesting question against the backdrop of the actual testimony. Now, when asked about how Miss Ford went about getting legal representation, Miss Ford essentially responded she didn't know what to do, had never been in a situation where complex political legal issues were part of her thinking. However, her lifelong BFF was not only a lawyer, she was a career lawyer within the Department of Justice and as a legal counsel for the FBI, had specific insight into exactly these issues. You could say Miss Monica McLean was or is a subject matter expert on the exactly the issue that Miss Ford was facing. So why did Miss Ford give such a disingenuous response to the question? And don't know either. But let me see something here. Let me see. This is worthwhile for you to be wasting your time with. Let's go into it. So, according to Sundance, in a letter released last night, which would be October 2nd, from a former boyfriend of Christine Blasey Ford, there was a name curiously not redacted. The name of Monica L. McLean was revealed as a lifelong friend of Miss Ford who helped with polygraph preparation. Say it ain't so. The media has begun to focus on the letter as outlining a lie told by Miss Ford during recent congressional testimony. But the backup story to Miss Monica McLean is an even bigger story. So here's the letter from the boyfriend. I so-and-so am a current resident of, you know, wherever, California. I first met Christine Blasey, now Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, in 1989 or 1990 in California. From 1990 to 91, I was just friends with Ford. From approximately 1992 to 1998, I was in a relationship with Dr. Ford. I found her truthful and maintained no animus towards her. During our time dating, Dr. Ford never brought up anything regarding her experience as a victim of sexual assault, harassment, or misconduct. Dr. Ford never mentioned Brett Kavanaugh. During some of the time we were dating, Dr. Ford lived with Monica McLean, who I understood to be her lifelong best friend. During that time, it was my understanding that McLean was interviewed for jobs at the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office. I witnessed Dr. Ford help McLean prepare for a potential polygraph exam. Dr. Ford explained in detail what to expect, how polygraphs work, and helped McLean become familiar and less nervous about the exam. Dr. Ford is able to help because of her background in psychology. Dr. Ford and I lived together while we were dating and stayed together in a long-distance relationship when Dr. Ford moved to Hawaii sometime around 1998, although I'm not sure the particular year. It might have been a bit earlier or later. While visiting Ford in Hawaii, we traveled around the Hawaiian Islands, including one time on a propeller plane. Dr. Ford never indicated fear of flying. To the best of my recollection, Dr. Ford never expressed a fear of closed quarters, tight spaces, or places with only one exit. I assisted Dr. Ford with finding a place to live in blank, California. Some of that's been redacted. She ended up living in a very small 500 square foot house with one door. Despite trying to maintain a long-distance relationship, I ended the relationship once I discovered that Dr. Ford was unfaithful while living in Hawaii. After the breakup, I took her off the credit card we shared, but nearly 1 year later, I noticed Dr. Ford had been charging the card and charged about $600 worth of merchandise. When confronted, Dr. Ford said she did not use the card, but later admitted to the use after I threatened to involve fraud prevention. I didn't speak again to Ford until about 2002, when Ford contacted me briefly. After that, I hadn't thought much about her until I saw her story in the Washington Post on Sunday, September 6, 2018. I do not want to become involved in this process or current investigation, but wanted to be truthful about what I know, signed so-and-so. Dated October 2nd, 2018, 8:01 Pacific Daylight Time. In addition to boyfriend known as Miss Monica McLean in the current letter, Miss Monica Lee McLean was also one of the signatories of another letter from the Holton Arms class of 1984, bolstering the credibility of Miss Blasey Ford. Date September 17, 2018, to the United States Congress. We, of the Holton Arms class of 1984, are writing on behalf of our friend and classmate Dr. Christine Blasey Ford to attest to her honesty, integrity, and intelligence, and to contend that her decision to provide information pertaining to a sexual assault is not a partisan act. It is an act of civic duty, and the experience she described in her letter needs to be taken seriously. We represent all political parties, and we support Christine bringing this matter forward. Christine has had to weigh the personal cost of sharing her experience against her own conscience. We recognize that this has been an extraordinary, difficult decision, and admire her courage for being willing to speak her truth when it would have been easier to stay silent. Willing to speak her truth, not the truth, but her truth. Okay. So you have to parse this stuff when you're dealing with liberals. As sexual assault violates a woman's most fundamental rights, it must be considered a failure of character at any age, regardless of the subsequent accomplishments and power attained by the offender. It should not be dismissed as youthful bad judgment, however apparent it may be. In light of Christine's experience, we hold our elected officials responsible for conducting a more thorough and comprehensive review of the Supreme Court nominee. Having taken this courageous step, Christine deserves your due consideration on this serious matter. We stand with our friend Dr. Christine Blasey Ford and admire her honesty and resolve on behalf of our nation. Mm-hmm. Now, some research into Ms. Ford's lifelong friend from school, Miss Monica McLean, her date of birth of 3/15/66. That's right. Reveals an almost guaranteed likelihood the polygraph assistants had something to do with the career path Miss McLean would take. Monica Lee McLean was admitted to the California bar in 1992, the same year Miss Ford's boyfriend stated he began a 6-year relationship with her best friend. The address for the current inactive California law license is now listed as Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Note, remember this, it becomes more relevant later. According to her LinkedIn background, Miss Monica Lee McLean was a 24-year employee of the Department of Justice at FBI from 1992 to 2016. And according to public records, Miss McLean worked in both Los Angeles, California, and New York, New York, both liberal bastions. In 2000, Los Angeles FBI declaration, Miss McLean describes herself as a special agent of the FBI, associate division counsel, and the Los Angeles division legal unit. Special agent, huh? Anyways, here's a declaration to the FBI. It says, I, Monica McLean, declare as follows. One, I, I'm a special agent in the Federal Bureau of Investigation and am currently assigned as an associate division counsel in the FBI's Los Angeles Division Legal Unit. The FBI's legal unit, for the purpose of this matter, is the acting custodian of records for the FBI's Los Angeles Division. I declare under penalty of perjury that the foregoing is true and correct, dated 16 June 2000. Sometime between 2000 and 2003, McLean transferred to the Southern District of New York, FBI New York Field Office, where she shows up on various reports, including media reports, as a spokesperson for the FBI. Now, there was a family death in 2003, and Monica McLean then shows up with an address listed in Washington, D.C. in 2003. So it would appear Ms. McLean spent about 10 years in California, then returned to the East Coast. After 2003, McLean is working with the Southern District of New York as a public information officer for the FBI New York Field Office, side by side with the Southern District New York Attorney General Preet Bharara. Imagine that. Now, according to her LinkedIn profile, McLean retired from the FBI in 2016 after 24 years of work. It should be noted that Ms. McLean's PIO, Public Information Officer partner in New York, Jim Margolin, is still currently employed there and coincidentally attached to the case against President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen. It does not appear that Ms. Monica McLean ever married. On the East Coast, her historic addresses are current. Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and former Bethesda, Maryland, Potomac, Maryland, Washington, D.C., Malibu, California, Los Angeles, California, Laguna Beach, California, Marina Del Rey, California, and Laguna Hills, California, respectively. All addresses coinciding with her employment and transferred assignments therein. In April 2016, in the Delaware Cape Gazette, Ms. McLean shows up at a wine tasting event and is pictured within the publication. Ms. McLean, the article confirms the location of McLean in a relationship to the numerous public record citation of her Delaware resident. Now here's where things get really interesting. Ms. Monica Lee McLean and Christine Blasey Ford are lifelong friends. Obviously they have known each other since their high school days at Holton Arms, and both lived together as roommates in California after college. Their close friendship is cited by Ms. Ford's former boyfriend of 6 years. McLean retired from the FBI in 2016, apparently right after the presidential election. Her current residence is listed at Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, which aligns with public records and the serendipitous printed article. Now, where did Ms. Blasey Ford testify she was located at the time she wrote the letter to Dianne Feinstein accusing Brett Kavanaugh? Here's the transcript. Mitchell, the second is the letter that you wrote to Senator Feinstein dated the July 30th of this year. Did you write the letter yourself? Ford replies, I did. Mitchell says, and I, since it's dated July 30th, did you write it on that date? Ford says, I believe so. It sounds right. I was in Rehoboth, Delaware at the time. I could look into my calendar and try to figure that out. It seemed, and Mitchell interrupts her, was it written on or about that date? Ford says, yes, I traveled. I think the 26th of July to Rehoboth, Delaware, so that makes sense because I wrote it from there. Mitchell says, is the letter accurate? Ford says, I'll take a minute to read it. So she reads it to refresh her memory. Not unusual. It happens in court all the time. A lot of people are making a big deal about it. I didn't. A lot of times, especially when police officers have written so many reports and the case comes to trial months and months and months later, you have to refresh your memory. It's not a big deal. So, we have Dr. Blasey Ford at Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, on 26 July 2018. We've got her lifelong BFF, Monica McLean, who worked as attorney and POI in the DOJ FBI in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Apparently at the same time, she wrote the letter to Senator Dianne Feinstein. I know, I get it. Ms. Blasey Ford and Ms. McLean, the BFF she coached on a lie detector testing, together for 4 days leading up to the actual writing of her letter, July 26th to July 30th. It would appear that Miss Blasey Ford was with Monica McLean, the retired FBI agent and former New York field office spokesperson at the time she wrote the letter to Senator Feinstein. That would certainly begin to explain quite a bit about who exactly was handling Miss Ford and how there would be an intentional effort from a subject matter expert on how to best position the attack against Brett Kavanaugh. Who better to help scrub the internet history and know what processes and people to enlist in such preparatory work than a retired lawyer who worked deeply inside the FBI? Not only did Miss McLean possess a particular set of skills to assist Miss Ford, but Miss McLean would have had a network of DOJ and FBI resources to assist in the endeavor. A former friendly FBI agent to do the polygraph, a network of politically motivated allies. Does the appearance of FBI insider and deputy FBI director Andrew McCabe and Michael Bromwich begin to make more sense? Do the loud and overwhelming requests by political allies for FBI intervention take on a different meaning or make more sense now? Standing back and taking a look at the bigger picture, could it be that Mrs. McLean and her team of ideological compatriots within the DOJ and FBI, who have massive axes to grind against the current Trump administration, are behind this entire endeavor? Consider all the embattled, angry institutional officials, former and current, and considering the recently fired DOJ and FBI officials, and considering the officials currently under investigation, and considering the declassification request, which will likely lead to the exposure of even more corruption, could it be that these elements wanted to do something, anything, to get back at the executive branch and possibly change the tide? If so, and I think the likelihood is pretty good, doesn't everything known just easily reconcile if you think of Miss Blasey Ford as a tool for those ideologues? If Miss Monica McLean and her allies wanted to strike, she couldn't be the visible face of the confrontation because she is a retired FBI. It would be too obvious. She would need a patsy, a friend who could deploy the hit on her or their behalf. It would need to be someone she could shape, easily manage and guide, someone who could be trusted and at the same time would be trusting of them. It is quite likely that Miss McLean selected or recruited her lifelong best friend, Miss Blasey Ford. So what do you think? Do you find it somewhat interesting, to say the least? You know, sometimes, you know, we look at conspiracies and some of them are just outlandish. But now we start to think about it and we think about this and we see what's going on. And I tied all these stories together. Different subjects, different people, but it's the same institutional corruption. Think about it. Is it true or not? I don't know. But it does lend, as you know, an air of credibility to it. You know, sometimes the best conspiracy theories are those that are paper thin. Ones that aren't convoluted, where you had to sit there and really think about it. Sometimes you just get that feeling. It's like, this is too easy to follow. And don't forget, you have to have people. You can't have a conspiracy that's too complicated. Otherwise, you can't get people to follow along. If you make it easy to follow on, then everybody knows their role and what role to play. I'm just putting it out there. I find it quite interesting. You know, and if you did listen to the Kavanaugh hearings, did it bother you that there were nobody on either side, Republicans or Democrats, were absolutely afraid to hit her head on and challenge her story because they were afraid of the optics. The Democrats were right. They were afraid of the optics. Oh, they might They'll say we're harassing a poor victim. You're only a victim if you're actually a victim. Sometimes you have to sit back and say, "There's, you know, I got to tell you something. I retired from the sheriff's office after 26 years. And I got to tell you, if I had been called to the Blasey Ford residence and she told me this story, I would make a report, absolutely. But during the report, part of our policy would be here, you have to write, you have the victim write down what happened to him, so that way later on, if you have to go to court, they can't say, well, I never said that to the deputy. Well, here it is, it's in your own handwriting. But let's just suppose that that did happen, and Ford gave me her version of events of what happened. And I took that set of that report to the state's attorney's office and say, I need a warrant. They would laugh me right out of there. There's no facts to which to build a case on. There just isn't. Now, some people say, well, this isn't court. It's not court. This is a court of public opinion. Yeah, but you're sitting there destroying a person's life. And for what? For what? The American people see this. They don't like it. And I will give, you know what? I'm going to give props. And you know me. I don't give props to Democrats for anything. But for you Democrats out there who have sat there and walked away and said, this isn't my political philosophy. This is not what I signed up for. And you walked away and you say, this is all BS and nonsense. I respect you for that. You know, I like to respect my enemies when possible. And I'll tell you why. Because it goes a long way. It will eventually. Just the way it is. Just the way it is, my friends. Something to think about. Yeah, we can't. Is there something bad going to happen in this country? I believe so. We're probably looking at, real quickly, the jury in the Van Dyke shooting here in Chicago, where the knife was shot 19 times by a Chicago police officer. The jury has the case now. They've already made plans to protest and carry on, no matter what the verdict is coming out of the trial in downtown Chicago. At some point in time, something bad's going to happen. It's going to be politically motivated. There will be bloodshed. And I don't know. The first two incidents will get swept under the rug. People will keep their cool. Third or fourth incident, it's not going to happen. It just isn't. Something to think about. Something to think about. I know, like I've asked you before, if they, you know, there's so many what ifs right now, I can't keep up with it anymore. They really can't. But let me ask you this. As a patriot, what are you willing to do? Where are you willing to go? What are you willing to do? Willing to go to the streets? Because that, I think, is going to happen. I do believe so, because the useful idiots on the other side are not going to give up. They're going to continue being, and they're going to do something dumb. They can't help themselves. They will. But anyways, that's just what I'm thinking. I just wanted to share this episode with you. I think it's important for you to understand it, at least get some knowledge about it. And that's just the way it is. In the meantime, I want to thank you for joining me tonight. I'm John Jeffers. Here on the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network. I'm going to be submitting this episode to KYAH, 540 AM, the Talk Authority of Utah, to be broadcast on their radio station. Hope you listen to it. Those broadcasts will start very shortly. I'll be doing the promos hopefully by tomorrow. But until then, I want to say thank you again for joining me tonight, listening into the topic. Get a hold of me at ContraRadio@live.com, ContraRadio@live.com, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a good weekend. I'm John Jeffers for the Jeffers Brief. Have a good night.